Hi, everyone. Welcome to Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. My name is Lori, and today I'm joined by Kaylee, who's going to be talking about her experience with borderline personality disorder and her facilitation of poetry workshops with Emotions Matter. So I'm super, super excited to hear about that. I know that's been really important to her recovery. So Kaylee, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Thanks for having me, Lori. I really appreciate it. So I'm originally from Massachusetts, and I now live in Rhode Island with my husband, and I've been writing poetry for over 31 years now, believe it or not. I started out writing it to define how much I loved my mother and my grandmother, and I delighted in showing them how excited I was and how much I loved them, and I always call it the BPD love because it was very overwhelming to my tiny human experience at the time I was writing it. And so over time, poetry has uplifted me in my very dark spaces of living with borderline personality disorder and, you know, trying to help others discover the positivity in their lived experience with borderline personality disorder, not waxing poetic about it, but finding ways to love themselves through the darker moments, as we all have as humans.
Don't we all? Yeah, absolutely. And so when were you diagnosed with borderline?
So I like to kind of back the story up. I started therapy when I was probably a sophomore in college. So I was just at this at a Catholic university going to their counseling center. So they didn't...
Sorry, what's a... Okay, what grade is a sophomore? Because I'm a Canadian and I always forget.
Oh. So I was about 19 years old.
Oh, okay.
19, 20 years old. And I was heading into their counseling services center. And of course, you know, counseling is completely different than all the different therapeutic modalities we have now. So, you know, I'd talk and talk about these experiences I was having, and I would get nowhere because talking isn't skills-based. So by the time I was 26, I had done CBT therapy. That didn't really help. The person doing the CBT therapy said she didn't want to tell me what I had because it's highly stigmatized. And I eventually, after spending quite a bit of time with this therapist, I eventually, by the age of 29 or 30, was finally properly diagnosed. And it was like a light was turned on in a dark room. And I was like, wait, this makes so much sense. And there's a way to grow from here.
Totally. And the fact that, like, she said, oh, it's super stigmatized, so I don't want to tell you. Like,
she was reinforcing that.
Yeah.
The belief.
The fact that you should be shamed about having it. And she delayed that like light moment and that relief moment for another 3 years. Like, that's so not cool.
Yeah, it was super delayed. And I, you know, later, of course, I was able to go back and find the gift in that delay. I don't know that I would have been ready to enter the right therapy. Also, the right therapy wasn't local to me years before, because I had someone in my life that was brave enough to hint at the possibility that I needed something like dialectical behavior therapy. CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, was the modality that was within my budget and my driving, like where I was located at the time in Massachusetts. The only dialectical behavior therapy resources were in the city in Boston, Massachusetts, and that wasn't somewhere I was able to trek out to and also pay exorbitant amounts of money for. So there was a lot of things prohibiting me at the time. So by the time I was 30, I found a DBT program that was near me, thankfully. And it was a time in which I would always say, you know, I have to save my life. I have to go and save my life, because I was so deep. I was deeply struggling internally. It was this massive, chaotic, emotional ball, this mess. And I knew that life didn't have to be that way, but I just didn't know how do I carve myself out of this darkness. You know, and I didn't want to be a victim of myself anymore. And I remember the therapist who I always say I did my best work with, she looked at me and she said, "You don't have to be a victim of yourself." And I was like, that's so mean. Because at the time I was so sensitive and I was so keyed into being offended quite frequently. And that's why my life was very chaotic. So she said that to me and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to come back. Because naturally, why would I do that? That felt like rejection. Yeah. But I said, you know, I'm going to commit to this. I think it was like a 12-week program. I'm sorry. It was a 12-week group therapy program with DBT therapy, individual session once a week or something. So I was in group once a week and in individual DBT therapy once a week so I think they said it was like 12 weeks. And I was like, nope, I'm going to commit myself to a year of it. And I'm going to learn it in and out, upside down. And I'm going to be the person that changes my life.
Yes.
And I did that. And it was miraculous.
Amazing.
And then by the time that those 12 months were up, coincidentally, my therapist is like, so I have something to tell you. And she goes, I'm leaving the
practice. Oh, no.
She's like, what do you mean? I found the best therapist on earth and you're leaving in 2 weeks?
Oh, shit.
So then I felt unmoored. I felt steady but unmoored. And then a couple weeks after that, I would have a 3-year romantic up and down roller coaster ride relationship come to a complete end. Ooh. And so it was like, how am I doing this?
That's like all so of the rejections that are like the worst for us at the same time. Oh my God.
Yeah.
But you were able to cope through it because you had learned the skills, or no? Did it spiral back?
I was able to cope through it. I won't say it looked beautiful because I think you have to allow for your humanity.
Yeah, it never does. If it does, then something's weird.
I can be pretty stubborn. So I know I wanted to like show like this image of like what getting over a 3-year relationship looks like and launch myself into, you know, surface healing. And I actually signed up to fundraise for charity for the Boston Marathon directly after that relationship failure. And so I ended up running it on my 33rd birthday. Wow. To create my own healing journey and my own miracle out of that pain that I had experienced. And it wasn't just the person I was in the relationship with. I played a large role. And I don't think we were right for each other, but I kept denying. I kept denying it. I very much wanted to prove that we were great together. And we weren't. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of us cling to relationships that are not healthy for us for a variety of reasons. But yeah, I mean, I'm definitely no angel in a relationship, but I'm often picking the people that are the worst option for me also.
Yeah, like they bring out the lower quality parts of you instead of highlighting and celebrating the things that are strong in you and the things that you can grow in yourself and then in relation to that person, which I found in my husband. But back at that time, I had done the deep DBT work. I had really taken inventory, and that relationship was never going to survive the new chapter of who I was becoming. I just didn't know it at the time.
Totally. And when did you meet your husband in all of this?
Oh, well, so that breakup happened right before Thanksgiving of 2018. And my husband, so in January of 2019, I went to see a psychic because that's what we all do when we're, you know, in the throes of grieving relational experiences. And she said, the person that you're going to end up with is getting ready for you. And of course, I love words and I love poems and I love taking words and clinging to them just as much as I liked clinging to people. And I kept saying to myself that entire year, well, if this person's getting ready for me, I have to get ready for them. So it turned into this whole journey, which I called the year of magic. And I went chasing sunrises, sunsets, woods, trails, training for the marathon, writing, filling myself up on podcasts, like any podcast that would warm me and make me feel love. I'd fill myself up on Hallmark movies and romance movies, because I am just like a hopeless romantic. And so I'd round the corner into September, the end of September 2019, and I'd go be the maid of honor in one of my college best friends' weddings. And I'd give the speech and I'd shake her brother's hand. He'd been on the periphery of my life for a decade at that point. And we looked at each other funny. I caught the bouquet. I left Rhode Island, thought nothing of it. And then in October, our lives came back, you know, together. And we went on a date. We immediately knew we needed to be married. And 8 months later, we were married in the pandemic.
Oh my goodness. Whoa.
So it seemed very borderline, but I assure you it's not.
No, but you knew him for years, right? Like it just never, the timing never worked out. Yeah.
The timing just never, it's the perfect love story for a poet. And I think it was about being intentional. It was about getting ready, because I never would have been the woman for him had I not spent that time getting ready.
That makes sense. Did he know about your mental health when you started getting together?
I was super open about it at that point. I had started volunteering for Emotions Matter back in 2018. And I always joke that I'm very loud and proud about my borderline and my depression and, you know, co-occurring type human experiences. And so we pretty much walked into Barnes and Noble together and picked out a borderline personality disorder book for him to read. And he read it. He was very supportive. It's still on our bookshelf. It's like Loving Someone with Borderline Personality Disorder, something to that effect. And yeah, he's incredibly patient, very grounding. And, you know, we work from each other's strengths.
That's beautiful. I'm so glad that you found that. I feel like I found that in my husband too. And in a similar way, he was on, I had been friends with him for a year before, and it just was never the right moment. And then, yeah, he's exactly what I needed in the moment that he came. Yeah. So
that's why I feel like everything is on time. We have this impatience to us, and I don't deny that I've always kind of operated from some sort of impatience, but when you let things be and you allow, things really do come to you gently, quietly, you know, like he's such a grounded, kind person that has no chaos to him whatsoever. I might be the chaos to him, but yeah. He has none whatsoever. He possesses no chaos. And I remember that being very foreign to me. I remember being like, what relationship did I just walk into?
It feels like weirdly uncomfortable to be with somebody who has no chaos.
Right.
You're like, this isn't normal for me. Because I assume your previous relationships had a lot of chaos.
Oh, yes. I was constantly like begging for attention and, you know, looking at my phone 24/7 and trying to teach them how to care for me, but they weren't capable, you know, of giving.
Or willing.
Yeah. Capable, willing of giving the bare minimum, like things that are the bare minimum. I was like, wow. And that shouldn't have been so shocking. And I shouldn't have had to beg for scraps.
Yep.
Or crumbs, you know, and that was a great learning curve for me. Here I was thinking, oh, like, here's your crumb, build a whole life off the crumb. I didn't realize, you know, you need a whole house foundation to build a life off of, and one where someone is willing to give to you just as much as you are to give to them. And I don't mean overgive. I don't mean cross boundaries. I mean just genuine respect and consideration and care. And that shouldn't be rare. Love like that should not be rare. And I believe everyone deserves love like that. So.
Absolutely. And it's our like frustrating predisposition to either rush to try and find that when it's not ready or we're not ready, or not feel like we deserve that because we've grown up either being told we're flawed or feeling we're flawed, or just like, I mean, I guess like, yeah, we are being told we're flawed. We have a diagnosis saying our personality is disordered, yeah. Right? So I think like it can go either way, or it could be a really like unfortunate combination of both of those things where we let ourselves have lower standards because it's all we've ever known. And because chaos is more comfortable than comfort.
Right. And I think if our primary language is coming out of a chaotic environment, it's like, well, what are you going to be most attracted to? You're going to love the struggle because that's what you believe love to be. You don't believe love to be a rest between breaths. Like you don't believe it's a safe haven, right? So it's undoing a lot of that. And that unfortunately takes a long time. So, you know, I didn't get married till I was 34. I think I had just turned 34. I love how I'm almost 38 and I can't remember my own age.
COVID just like really screwed with time.
It really did. So yeah, I have a twin. So my whole entire life, I was constantly compared to her. And she got married when she was 27 and had three kids pretty in quick succession. And I love them dearly. And I remember people saying to me, are you jealous that she's ahead of you? And I was like, I know deep down inside of myself, I had this knowing that I couldn't just go and marry whoever was right in front of me because it would have been a complete disaster. I would have never survived. They would have never survived, whoever the person was. It just was not going. I knew that I couldn't rush into anything in a way that it was going to quote unquote save me or be the thing that saved me, because no one at the end of the day is coming to save you. You have to save yourself. And that's a hard reckoning. I'm not saying that's easy, but it's just true.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, the minute we expect others to save us, or if anybody comes into a relationship trying to save us, red flag.
Yeah.
I mean, there's moments, I'm sure, with your husband, I know with my husband, where they need to pick up extra emotional support than maybe they would with a different relationship, because, you know, we need that in that moment. But then also, we provide that to them too when they need it. And like, it's a full on give and take at all times, not like a, I'm here to fix you or save you.
Yeah, it's a beautiful flow. You know, it goes mm-hmm. both ways. You know, on days that I'm not 100%, he's 100%. And on days he's not 100%, I'm 100% for us, you know? Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
It's a beautiful thing. And it's something I'm very thankful for. And I think the other part about being borderline is we forget the wonderful passions that we bring to a relationship and the aliveness we bring to a relationship and the gratitude we bring to a relationship. You know, this is a person that knows how deeply loved he is by me without question because of the fact that I'm a deeply feeling person who happens to live with borderline personality disorder. So
totally. Yeah. And that's what makes us the best people. you know, we call our peer support group the Super Feelers Club for a reason, because our super feelersness is a superpower that I personally wouldn't give up. I mean, there have been times where I would have given it up, but I think that people like us, you know, yes, we have this pathologized label, but at the end of the day, we just don't fit into the small box that society wants us to fit into. And that makes people uncomfortable and the need to other us by having a diagnosis. But we're amazing people who have so much value to bring to the world. And if only more people could feel as deeply and love as deeply as we could, like what an amazing world this would be.
Right. It would be a world with a lot of healing mm-hmm. in it and a lot of grace.
And empathy.
You know, less chaos, I think. I'm at a stage in my experience where I can be grateful for what it's brought me, what it's taught me, and how far I've come. You know, this is such an internal experience that it can't necessarily be celebrated the way that something externally can. It doesn't always feel tangible. So I've often had to make the inner experience tangible. And that's why these poetry workshops for wellness as a wellness tool are so important, I think, because we're taking that inner life, whether it's anger, frustration, sadness, the deep well of grief, the deep experience of loving people to a level that we can't contain inside of ourselves, and taking that world and putting it on the paper and allowing for that expansiveness versus using those things against ourselves as to negate ourselves, to erase our identities. And so that's why I think they're so important and they're so vital. And I know poetry has played that role for me, luckily, for most of my life. You know, I just turn to the page and I write. When I'm flooded with emotion, that's what I do.
And I'm sure so much beautiful art comes from that too.
Yeah.
That like others will never be able to replicate because it's just so like powerful and strong, right? Can you talk a little bit about Emotions Matter as an organization? Like, you know, what they do? I know a lot of people that listen to this podcast are super huge supporters of them, and that's amazing. And we want to be able to, you know, expand their audience as well. So do you want to tell us a little bit about them? You said you started volunteering in 2018.
Yeah. So I read Paula Tusiani-Ng's book, Remnants of a Life on Paper. It was a memoir about her family and her life with her sister Pamela, who unfortunately passed away due to BPD. So I read this book and I reached out through a Facebook message and I said, thank you for writing this book, because there hadn't been many books still in the publishing sphere to connect people with BPD. And I just really...
There still aren't.
Yeah. And I just really felt, wow, this is an amazing portrayal of it. And it also showed the portrayal of the anguish of the family going through that alongside their loved one. And I was moved by that, because so often when a person with borderline personality disorder is experiencing their symptoms, they're not looking outside of themselves. And I'm not saying that that always has to be the case, because I do know traumas can come from family experiences. But I do think it's important to look at the whole picture once you're able to, and come at it as an observer. And I feel like that's what this memoir did. And so I reached out. I was like, how can I help? I just want to help. And so I did, you know, a couple things with like editing or writing. And then as I continued to show up for Emotions Matter continued to show up for me. And it was a random conversation on the side. I had pulled off the side of the road after work one day, and I was talking to Paula, and we were talking about wellness workshops. And we came up with the idea of a poetry one. And so I started probably in 2020 or 2021. And, you know, I had like one or two people coming, and the format was really not great. And it was a lot of trial and error and a lot of vulnerability. And then we slowly built it over. And sometimes I have 7, sometimes I have 20. Registration caps off at 30, but the whole purpose behind Emotions Matter is to raise awareness for borderline personality disorder, but not only raise awareness, but raise support for people who are living with it and their family members. And it's an incredible organization that started out of love and grief and passion for changing lives. And we've certainly changed lives. There's peer support groups for men and for women, and there's grief support groups, and there's wellness workshops, not just my poetry one. There's peer support, which definitely goes a long way. I know you know what that's like. Just to have someone bear witness to you as someone who's living in a similar capacity is amazing, because then you can kind of grow up together if you connect well with a group of people. So
yeah, and you can look in the mirror and see where their experience connects with yours, how they're coping with what they're dealing with. And like, it's such a validating place to be.
Right. And they feel less alone. You know, like, I'm often like, is borderline personality disorder just like a lazy diagnosis of someone that needs someone to listen to them and be there for them? You know, it's like, it seems so, I mean, I've had people who don't know what it is judge me severely and carelessly and be like, oh my God, that's terrible. And, you know, and work to disempower someone on their journey versus empower them. And we definitely can come from a place of empowerment, which I think leads to a lot of capacity for self-love.
Totally. Which is something that we have been harmed. The lack of love is something that we've been harmed by for many of us our whole lives. Genuine love and like acceptance of who we are as people with the emotions that we live with.
Yeah. You know, if you're growing up and you're hearing the phrase, oh, you're just so emotional, or calm down, or, you know, like, you're acting crazy, you know, and I'm not even saying that the people saying that are doing it on purpose. They're doing it ignorantly.
Yeah. It's a lack of awareness. Totally. We've all done that. We've all been guilty of that. Even if we sit in this place of, you know, living with BPD, understanding the importance of validation, we all screw that
Absolutely.
Up.
We 100% do. And I think, you know, that's another component to it. Realizing that as, even though we have this definition and this stigma, which certainly is less stigmatized now. Like, I mean, I couldn't even say the word borderline, like, without quaking in my boots 10 plus years ago.
Yeah.
And now there's so many mental health resources, which I celebrate. But part of me, there's always a tiny part of me that's like, where were you when I was this age? But I'm so grateful that people coming up now, there are resources, and that perhaps their parents are of a generation that are open to those resources and open to helping and guiding and supporting. I've done panels where family members have come up and been like, oh, thank you for like sharing your story. Like, this gives me so much hope. Or my sister was struggling, but now I see that there's hope. Like, you can actually like go on and have a nourishing, beautiful life. And you can, you know, there's so many myths around BPD because, again, people don't have the education on it. And I just feel like it's part of my work in the world to share my story. So if it helps one person, or if it shines a light on a hard moment for someone, that they felt seen, you know, but I'm not perfect. So
nobody is. If you were perfect, nobody would care and listen to you, because that is very boring. Yeah, perfection is true. So boring. Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think like, not only is there so much stigma and misinformation, but our voices have also been silenced by a system too. And so the fact that we're, you know, we're here and all of these other organizations are here, people on social media saying like, this is who I am and I'm okay with that, is so beautiful. And yeah, do we all have work to do in terms of our own mental, physical, spiritual health? Obviously. I mean, I think anybody who's done DBT knows that like, you're going to be practicing skills for the rest of your life and they will make your life worth living. And without those skills, I mean, we've all been in places where life has not been worth living for us. And thankfully, we've all been able to, not all, but many of us have been able to find that kind of light and purpose from the pain that we experienced for so many years. And I'm just always so happy to chat with people who feel that way about like, this is my purpose.
Yeah. You know, like, there were so many deeply dark moments in my journey. And when you're in that dark, you can't see that other people just out there being humans, you know, what it means to be human, that kind of experience, have experienced those moments. Maybe not to the level, maybe not to the gravity that we've experienced it, being that we're so emotionally sensitive, but they've experienced it. Like, you go through the human process. There's going to be a day where you have a reckoning. It doesn't matter what day of your life you have that reckoning, but will you be able to stand there? Will you be able to hold yourself? And there were many moments I had to hold myself, and I had to recognize that it wasn't that I didn't want to be on this planet anymore. It's that I didn't want to feel how I felt. I didn't know the guide through those emotions, right? And so again, it's a very internal experience having these emotional roller coasters and such. So no one was going to see it. I wasn't going to be outwardly showing it to anyone. I was going to put on my work clothes, go to work, do my things, and pretend all was well, because if I showed any of that, I was going to be harshly criticized and not supported. And there was one experience where I kept one of those Christmas candles that are battery operated in my window, on my windowsill across from my bed. And that was the only thing that kept me going for an entire year because of a significant loss I experienced in my life. And I would write about that in great detail later, you know, about that candle, that all I needed was that flicker. And that's what kept me going. That's it. And so it can be as small as that. And there will be years of our lives, years, not just minutes, not just a day, where things might look like that. And that's okay. You can get through it. And I think where poetry will always come in, or the written word will always come in, even the spoken word will always come in, is that we can't allow ourselves to be silenced by people's judgments. You know, when we live in this increasingly loud world, it's so loud with people's judgments, but where is their love? And I want to be a person that's an example of love. And that's, you know, when I show up to my poetry workshops, I like to gauge my prompts towards loving yourself. And, you know, I worked with an artist after that year of the candle in the window. And I wanted this artist to bring what I had experienced to life, because I'm not visual, but I had this image. I had this beautiful dream where I was pouring love into myself. And I was like, what if I could just love myself whole? And what would that look like? What would that mean for me? Would it mean beautiful podcasts, lots of nature walks, lots of being by the water? Would that mean therapy? What does that look like to pour into myself? And I spent a year pouring into that. And so the image is this woman laying, and she has a watering can, and she's pouring into her heart until it fills. So, and it fills so much up with just love for herself, or their self, or, you know. And it was such a powerful image to me, a powerful dream. And so I worked with an artist to make it a reality so that I could see what that looked like. And it meant the world to me in that time. And so I think using whatever modality resonates with you is vital.
Absolutely. Would you be comfortable sharing that image with us?
Yeah. I mean, I can email it to you.
Yeah. I would love to see it. And if you're comfortable, like, we can put it on our Instagram when this episode comes out to show people what that image is. Yeah, if you're comfortable, absolutely. Totally don't have to decide right now. It sounds so beautiful, and it would resonate with so many people. And I love that I'm also a non-visual person. So, like, I love that you knew that about yourself and were like, but I still need this image. And so we're able to find an artist to be able to make that happen for you, because, yeah, like, if I tried to draw, it would be a stick figure and it would not be very helpful.
Yeah, I have stick figure art down. That's about it.
Yeah, exactly. So can you tell us a little bit about, you talked about prompts within your poetry workshops. I just know for a lot of people, it's like helpful to kind of have an idea of what these things look like before they sign up for them.
Oh, yeah. So essentially, I go through group guidelines, because we always want to make sure everyone is feeling safe, because it is vulnerable to be in a poetry workshop, to even write. And, you know, we do introductions. I introduce myself. I give my background with living with borderline personality disorder. I share some vulnerabilities and intentions for the workshop. A lot of those don't change because I am me. So, like, I'm not really going to be you know, a new iteration by the next month. But in any case, so, and then we move on. I'll do a writing warm up for about 5 minutes where I come up with some prompts, like lists your favorite, and it can be in a list. And people are just wildly creative. They are incredible what they come up with. And I'm like, I would have never even thought of that. You're amazing. So it just like lights me up so much. And I don't care if they're talking about rage. Have at it. I hear you. I get it. I lived it. I sometimes live it still. It's okay. And then we move on to a 10-minute section because I only have about an hour. And it's important at the end. I like asking or inviting people to read their poems and or share how they felt. Sometimes there's a lot of sharing and other times there's not, which is completely understandable. It depends on what we're bringing that day or in that time. But I always start off with myself because I don't think anyone should do something I'm not willing to do. So I always share what I came up with. And sometimes it's absolute chicken scratch of stuff. It's like a grocery list versus a real poem. But the purpose is to get yourself into that motion, right? Because like sometimes people have written or they've been away from writing a very long time, so they don't write, or they're trying to get back into their writing, or they've never written before. Like they've never written more than on the back of a receipt or something, which is completely fine because it's geared towards all levels of writing. I don't expect someone to have a master's degree in poetry coming to this. I expect them to be open and just take care of themselves as best as possible. And then there's a survey at the end. And I do ask for feedback because I like to change things. I like to know how people felt. And yeah, that's kind of, and this, and in this coming year, I am asking for $5 donations so that we can keep the program going because Emotions Matter is a nonprofit and that's really important.
Oh boy, do I understand that. Yeah, I know. I have like an ethical dilemma about that every time I do anything with this podcast or Super Feelers Club because it's like impossible to do it all for free, but want it to be accessible. So yeah, $5 right. is great. That sounds amazing. I am a non-writer, but I have tried to start with like journal prompts to try and I got like an app that gives me journal prompts. And every once in a while I'm inspired and I'll write something super short. And I'm kind of like, I should challenge myself to go to one of your workshops because it would be so outside of my comfort zone, but like in a good way.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. 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 I think that's so cool. So just to clarify, because I'm sure this is a question people will ask, you don't have to share your writing, right? It's just like an invitation to.
No, okay. No, it's invite, you know, share it. I do try to validate people and their work and their words and their feelings at the time that they're sharing. People share their cats.
Okay, good. That's my thing.
A lot of people have adorable cats. Some people ask, you know, where you can get prompts. So I'm probably going to add that in the, again, like I like to get feedback and then, so I'm going to add some places they can find prompts, but I create my own from my own lived experience. So like, you know, I think back to those dark times and I'm like, and I even have one prompt, which I'll share is, you know, what would you like someone to write for you? Because I know words were something I clung to. So I'd be like, that's how I feel love. Can someone write me something? But, you know, in the absence of someone really and realistically and healthfully being able to write me something, I started writing what I wanted to hear to myself as a way to care for myself, you know, and show up for myself. So that's one of the prompts that I have used. And then I have another prompt that I love where it's like, what do you vow to do for yourself, for your life, for your future? Because we're building our future in this moment right now. And that's vital. That's vitally important to me. You know, I wouldn't be here today if I didn't take a chance on believing that my future self was coming, you know, that I was going to grow into her and be what she needed. So.
Ooh, I love those prompts. That's so beautiful. The one about what do you need to hear? Like, what do you need to have written to you? Like, that's so powerful because so many of us have felt like we haven't been told what we needed to be told for our lives. Like, I'm thinking parents in particular. I'm sure many of us have things that we wish that had been told to us. Do you have a poem or anything that you want to share with us before we end?
Yeah, so I have a relationship poem, and it's actually about the relationship I talked about. It's called "Will You Forgive Me?" I said, "I love you first out of fear you'd slip through my fingertips, sand in an hourglass. I made love with you in the beach house and cried because I never wanted to forget that moment. It's true my body has been assaulted more than once, but you asked permission before you trespassed. It's not your fault and it's not mine. Will you forgive me for not knowing myself? Our first Valentine's Day by the ocean, it was below freezing. And I recall dinner didn't thrill you and you vehemently opposed having children. I adopted your storyline. We booked a trip abroad and after the Chateaubriand melted in my mouth, I told you I loved you so much that I'd marry you. You almost choked and my heart broke when you said it's not you. I just don't think I'm capable. Maybe if I allowed myself to hear you, I could have moved on. We were barely 4 months in with cracks everywhere. You'd say it again almost 2 years in, this time in your apartment while putting your black sneakers on. I remember the way you said it's not you. Those words are a whisper in my hair. I kept making love with the knowledge I was going to lose you. We skated around the future so much. Eventually, the ice caved in and I began to suffocate. Will you forgive me for all the times I was not brave enough to hear your truth louder than my fear?
Wow.
And I think we can all relate, you know.
Yep. The I adopted your storyline. I think that's what you said in halfway through there. Yeah. I was like, oh, my entire body. Like, that's so powerful. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Oh, my pleasure. Seriously. Oh,
that's, yeah. Wow. A couple of other questions that I should have asked around like the logistics of the workshop before I have my final question that I ask every time now. Is it available like to anyone?
Yeah, those with lived experience of borderline personality.
Any country?
Yeah. Yeah. I have people from Canada come. Yeah.
Yay. Okay. Awesome. And $5 donation. How do we register?
So there's a link. You can go and find the poster, so to speak, that's for writing for recovery for the Poetry Wellness Workshop on emotionsmatterbpd.org. And then I have it linked in my Instagram poetry account, KMPoetry14. It's a private account because people have used my writing against me and I just won't stand for that.
Yep.
So it doesn't have a large following, but I do have different beautiful quotes I post, the link letting people know when the poetry workshops are happening. I know that this episode won't air.
But are they monthly?
Usually, yes, but I will be on maternity leave in March because I'm having...
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm having a baby boy, so.
Oh, that's so exciting. Yeah. Congrats.
It's very exciting. We're down to the wire now, so it's like,
ah. Yeah, no kidding. That is very soon. Oh my goodness. Well, okay, that's awesome. So I will, when I put this episode out, I'll make sure that I have all those links and your Instagram and everything like that in the show notes as well. That's just easier for people to be able to just click on it. But yeah, the emotionsmatter.org, right? As well. We'll have
emotionsmatterbpd.org.
Emotionsmatterbpd.org. Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. Okay. They'll have that too. Awesome. Well, that's super exciting that you're having a baby. Aw.
I know. I didn't think it would be part of my future. So
yeah, that's understandable.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to be an amazing mother.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Oh, I have no doubt. Okay. The last question that I like to ask these days is, what are your favorite things about borderline?
The people. My God, the people I've met, they are some of the most extraordinary and brilliant and kind, life-changing people. You know, it just, for me, it's so empowering to be doing this work in the world. alongside others with lived experience. You know, like I've just the level of healing is so admirable because it's a lot of work to take on to change your life, to change your life, you know, and it's a reckoning with the self, and you have to look in that mirror and do the work. And that is, it's not for those without courage. That's for sure.
Yeah, not at all. I think you're the first person that said the people, and I totally agree with you. I totally agree.
I mean, I've really never met more loving and energizing, beautiful people on their healing path. And I admire it, and I'm inspired by it. And I welcome seeing that modeled for so many people, because they're literally changing people's lives. So
absolutely. Whenever somebody tells me they have borderline, I'm like, oh my God, yay! And then I'm like, okay, sorry, maybe I should clarify. That might not be the appropriate response in your current moment, but I promise you that like this is the best thing that's ever happened to you, right? Like getting that diagnosis for the first time is going to be the greatest gift you have ever received. And I'm so excited to welcome you into our community.
Oh, it was such a relief.
Such a relief. And not, to be fair, to validate other people's experience, it's not always a relief. Right. And I get that. And that is stigma playing out in our self-hatred and self-stigma and the discrimination of systems and people and all of these things. But Over time, like, I'm so excited when people tell me that they have borderline, because I'm just like, you're going to love everything about this now. Like, your life is going to change. It's going to be so beautiful. So thank you so much for coming on. I loved this episode so much, and I cannot wait for the rest of the world to listen to it.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate your openness, and you're just so genuinely wonderful, and you're doing great work in the world, so don't forget that.
Thank you so much. Yeah, you too. I always love, one of the things I love the most about people with borderline is that like we've never met, we've really never talked, but here we are, just had an hour long conversation that felt like it could go for 4 hours, and we would never run out of things to talk about.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Just like fast friends immediately. So Thank you so much, Kaylee. And yeah, we'll get your word out about the wellness workshops, and best of luck with your new baby.
I know, I can't wait. And I hope to see you at the poetry workshop I have in January and February, and then I'll be off from March to June, possibly.
Sounds good. See
how my new routine goes.
Take all the time you possibly can. But yeah, I'm super, super excited. So I will do my best to be there.
All right. Thank you.
Awesome. And thanks so much. Yeah, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. Lori and I are so grateful that you're here with us on this journey, and we can't wait to dive into more topics in the future with you all about borderline, and even have some more fun and exciting guests to join us on the podcast. If you really enjoyed this episode, we would love if you would rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. We would also love to see you interact with us on social media and on our Patreon page. The links to that are included in the show notes, so check us out there. We would be incredibly honored to get to know you all as you get to know us and our recovery stories. We love you, and we'll see you next time.